the old machine, I only learned to be mean. On my good days, I manufacture mystery. We were volunteers, lost in the gears. Sign here, Fade.
Welcome back to The Echo. I'm John Shiloh Beaumont II, practicing copyright law in the greater Atlanta area since 2004. And in 22 years, I've learned this. The law is a story someone tells a judge. The better story usually wins. But what happens when the story has no author? When a patent was drafted by a machine, the contract was reviewed by a model, the song was flagged by an algorithm, and the human being at the center of all of it.
Never asked for any of it.
Today I want to tell you a little story about two people, Jack and Diane. They are hypothetical. Composite characters built from real cases, real patent filings, real DMCA records, and the lived experience of practicing attorneys across this country. Their names are borrowed, with no apologies to the cougar. Here at Beaumont and Sheridan, we apologize for nothing. Nothing. And while these characters are fictional, the challenges that their stories raise are not. These problems are alive. Judges are hearing cases like these right now. Jack Calder is 34, lives in Louisville, Kentucky, writes songs. Hasn't made it big, but he's good. The kind of good where other songwriters come to his shows and take notes. He also builds things. Holds a patent on a guitar pickup design he prototyped in his garage. A songwriter and an engineer. Two ways of bringing new things into being that didn't exist without his intention. In the span of 1 month, Jack Calder lost control of both. It started with a friend sending him a link.
She sent me this website, Have I Been Trained? Said I should check it. I didn't even know what that meant. Trained for what? So I made an account, uploaded a couple of my tracks, and waited. The next morning, I had 47 hits. 47 of my songs in something called Layin' 5B. I didn't know what layin' was. I didn't know what 5B meant. I just knew someone had taken my work and put it in a database without asking.
L-A-I-O-N 5B is a data set of 5.85 billion image text pairs. It's used to train AI image generators. But it also contains links to audio. Millions of tracks. Including Jack's. And here's what matters. L-A-I-O-N didn't license anything. They scraped the open web. If your song was on a website that didn't block their crawler, your song went into the data set. Nobody asked. Nobody told you. Nobody paid.
I'm not rich, but I was pissed, so I started digging. I followed guidance from Beaumont and Sheridan's resources. I documented everything I could. Then I called a lawyer. That's when I met Diane.
Jack came into my office on a Tuesday. Brought a printout, this thick stack of papers with URLs, file names, hash values. He'd done a lot of homework. He asked me, can we get me out of the AI models?
Diane Collins, solo practitioner, 18 years, office above a coffee shop on West Main. She knows copyright law. And she knew, looking at Jack's stack of paper, that she was holding a clean DMCA case with a dirty outcome.
The DMCA part is pretty straightforward. You identify the infringing material, you send a takedown notice to the company hosting the music. The host removes it, or the host loses safe harbor, which just says they can't be sued for damages. That's the law. It works. For copies. But what Jack was dealing with wasn't copies of the songs. It was the mathematical patterns extracted from the songs. The songs had been used temporarily, just like someone listening to it on the car stereo. The model was already trained. The takedown removes the data from the public dataset. It doesn't untrain the model. That model still carries the statistical imprint of Jack's work, and there's no mechanism, none, to get it back out.
Seeing you took down all the pictures, at least of me and you.
That's the catch. That's the thing. The DMCA can make them stop distributing your work. It cannot make them unlearn your work. The meal has already been eaten. It's nourished the model. It is already in the bones. And the bones do not belong to you or me or Jack. They belong to a corporation. To help us understand the scale of what we're talking about, I'm joined by Marcus Webb. Marcus spent 8 years as an M&A associate at Kirkland & Ellis, one of the largest law firms in the world. He left in 2024 and now researches legal technology at the Georgetown Law Center on Privacy and Technology. Marcus, welcome back to The Echo.
What happened to Jack is the asymmetry at the heart of all of these cases. The ingestion happened in secret. By the time you discover it, the training is complete. The model is deployed. The value has been extracted. And the legal system is designed for a world where copying is detectable at the point of distribution, not a world where copying happens in a data center, months before anyone knows it occurred, for a purpose nobody understood was possible.
You're listening to The Echo. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Mommy took me to Little Debbie Park. It has giant brownies. You can climb on them. There's an oatmeal cream pie seat where you just sit and think about how yummy they are. Did you know they have 6 sugar packets in them? I know that. I know lots. I know Little Debbie spent almost $4 million last year so their fancy lawyers can talk to the government. They tell all the grown-ups that sugar is good for you. It's good. Democrats want to take Little Debbie from my school. Daddy says that's communist. The park is fun. The Little Debbie statue has a sign that says bringing families together since 1960. My family got together to learn about Bobby's diabetes. The doctor said he needs shots every day. And now, he gets a lot more attention from Mommy. Lucky. Look, that's a giant nutty bunny.
Little Debbie Park. Collegedale, Tennessee. Admission is free.
We're back. Jack's copyright problem was bad enough. But while Diane was drafting Jack's DMCA notices, something else happened.
When I hit a creative block with music, and damn if this AI training trash wasn't making me question the whole idea of putting my work online. When I get stuck musically, I shift to building things. I'd been working on a new pickup design, fourth generation. I'd patented one myself. It was a ton of paperwork and waiting. I filed provisional applications, the whole thing. This design was better. Different coil geometry. I've been testing it for 6 months, and it was just better. So I went to file. The patent office rejected it. Prior art, they said. And I thought, prior art? From who? I invented this. I've been building these things since 2020. I held the last patent on the design, which protects it for 20 years. How is that possible? So I looked up the patent they cited. It was filed by a company called Aurelia. Never heard of them. The application was submitted 8 months before mine. The claims covered my coil geometry exactly. And when I dug into it, I mean really dug, I found out Aurelia had filed over 5,000 patent applications that year. 5,000! They don't make guitar pickups. They don't make anything. They make paper.
Aurelia is a patent assertion entity. A shell. Their business model is simple. Use AI to scan the patent landscape, identify gaps, generate claims to fill those gaps, and file applications at scale. They don't invent. They pre-invent. They lock up future ideas so that when a real inventor, someone like Jack, actually builds something, they have to pay a toll. Or fight a patent challenge that costs, on average, $400,000 minimum.
We want nothing, we want it all.
That's right, Zebulon. They build nothing, but they want everything. It's like patent trolls on steroids. But the troll doesn't even need to eat. It just files.
Jack called and presented me with the new problem. He asked me if we could fight it. I told him what an inter partes review costs. He went quiet. Then he said, so they can just take my idea before I have it, and there's nothing I can do? I didn't have a good answer.
And this is what I mean when I say the patent office can barely keep up. The AI drafting tools have changed the math entirely. A human attorney used to take weeks to draft 50 applications a year. Now, firms can pump out thousands. Examiners average less than 20 hours total per application. Speculative, paper-thin ideas get past review. They issue, sit on the books, and turn into legal landmines.
19 hours! I spent 6 months on that pickup design.
And the examiner had 19 hours to evaluate something an AI produced in 19 seconds. The system is still running on human bandwidth, but the input is machine volume.
Is there any consequence to bulk filing junk patents? I mean, there's got to be a penalty box somewhere.
Yes, heavy ones, if you get caught. For corporate applicants, every filing requires a licensed attorney to sign off, certifying under penalty of sanctions or losing their license that they conducted a reasonable inquiry. Filing fees at the large entity level run between $800 and $2,000 per application. Bulk filing thousands through a legitimate firm would cost millions in non-refundable fees. And if a court finds bad faith, they can declare the patent unenforceable and order the filer to pay the defendant's legal fees.
So there are safeguards.
On paper, here's where it gets strange. Individual inventors can file without an attorney at all, pro se. Fees drop to a couple $100. So the safeguards assume a bad actor is playing by the rules of the profession. But the profession isn't the only path in.
And the pro se filer doesn't have a law license to lose. If I signed off on a junk filing, my career's over. If a shell company's nominee does it, what exactly are they forfeiting? Their right to file more junk patents? That's not a deterrent. That's a business expense.
Has anyone actually been caught exploiting this?
It's hard to prove. But when a group of linked shell companies files 5,000 or 6,000 patents in a year and doesn't manufacture a single product, it's hard to believe a human being meaningfully reviewed each one. The plausible deniability is the point. The AI makes it look legitimate. The signature makes it legal. And the volume makes it impossible to challenge them all.
Does that mean intellectual property, as we understand it, is IP dead?
Maybe. Maybe not. It's definitely on life support. The people who are supposed to be keeping it alive, the patent office, the courts, the profession, they're outnumbered. Not outsmarted, outnumbered. But I think it's going to be even weirder. The death of the intellectual property era isn't going to come through the U.S. Patent Office. Currently, AIs can't file patents. A substantial amount of the discovery must be done by a human for a patent application to even be considered right now. Do you see where I'm going here?
I do. I'm a fictional copyright attorney, remember? Please lay it out for our single, solitary listener.
Discoveries made by AI are automatically in the public domain. They are not patentable. This is current U.S. law. So in our case, where Jack has made the next logical leap in his guitar pickup design, that leap, well, it's logical. There's no reason an AI model can't follow the same logic and make the same leap. And you can bet your bottom dollar that every public patent has been scraped and used to train large language models.
Okay. I don't think I had really taken the thought as far as you're going here. Are you saying that when all patents expire, the next idea based on that patent, if it's an idea enabled using AI, that idea cannot be patented? That has really broad implications if people keep using AI to trigger new discoveries.
Right. The only way to protect new ideas will be to keep your ideas secret. But that's going to be really tough if lots of people are using these same tools to innovate in the same areas. So yeah, I do think IP and the legal profession around it has cancer, and the diagnosis is terminal.
Come join the team at the Red Bank Police Department. We're looking for men who trust their gut and don't overthink it. If you've ever been told you're a little too aggressive, a little too quick to act, we call that initiative. Red Bank. C+ safety rating. Crime above the national average. That's not a problem. That's job security. And we need officers who see the world the way it really is. You know what we mean. No college required. Critical thinking slows things down. We prefer men of action. Our kind of men.
Unit 4,
Red Bank
show
Police.
Me 10-8.
Walk in. If you the right fit, you'll know. If you not, you'll also know. Red Bank Police Department. We've been doing it our way since 1870.
Jack is an engineer. He understands systems, and the systems that he thought were designed to protect individual creators. When he needed them, he found that they're being exploited to protect the thieves. It looked like these systems were designed to extract value from people like him without their consent. Twice. Once through copyright. Once through patents. The two legal frameworks that are supposed to protect creators. Both of them, in his case, had failed.
Here they come to storm your shore.
And then there's Diane. Let's talk about Diane for a minute.
In 2023, I subscribed to an AI document review service. The pitch was that it'll save you time. Contract analysis, clause flagging, due diligence. For a solo practitioner, time is everything. So I signed up. And for about 6 months, it was helpful. Then it missed a non-compete clause in an employment contract for a client who was leaving one job for another. The AI flagged the clause as boilerplate. It wasn't boilerplate. It was a 2-year non-compete with liquidated damages. My client signed. 2 weeks later, his former employer sued. I spent the next 4 months cleaning it up, on my own dime.
What did the AI company say?
They said the system was 94% accurate, as if that was supposed to comfort me. 94% accurate means 6 out of every 100 contracts has a mistake. If I review 100 contracts a month, which I do, that's 6 mistakes. 6 expensive, career-ending mistakes. 6 clients who trusted me and got burned. They said that's within the acceptable error tolerance, but the model's improving every day. I said acceptable to who?
Is it enough to be alive?
This is what I've been tracking across the profession. It's not just the big firms. The big firms grab the headlines. 60% summer associate cuts. AI replacing document review teams. But the biggest damage is being done to solo practitioners and small firms. They're the ones who can't negotiate with the AI vendors. They're the ones who don't have in-house tech teams to validate the outputs. And they're the ones who serve the clients, the Jacks, who need help the most.
So let me trace this. Jack's copyright claim is viable, but incomplete. You can take down the copy, but not the learning. Jack's patent claim is blocked by an AI shell company he can't afford to challenge. And the lawyer he hired to help him is fighting her own war against the same technology, using a tool that makes her less competent, not more, because the error rate is acceptable to the vendor, but not to her clients.
Can't make nothing but messages.
Diane gave Jack the only advice she had left.
I told him, the law as it stands can't fix this. Copyright law was written for a world of physical copies. Patent law was written for a world of human inventors. Neither framework anticipated a system that could consume everything and produce nothing. No product, no artifact, just a statistical map that generates new things on command. The fix has to come from legislation. New laws, new rules. And that means you need to talk to your legislator.
She gave me the name. My senator. Mitch McConnell. Yup, the dead guy. I looked him up. He's been in office longer than I've been alive. He's never sponsored an AI bill, never held a hearing on AI, never once used the phrase training data in any public statement. And we're all pretty sure he died a few weeks back, but his party's afraid of losing a seat, so they're just not announcing it. Weekend at Mitch's. Now, let's assume for the sake of argument that he is alive, that he is a living, breathing 84-year-old man, and not a very convincing hologram propped up by staffers. There are entire categories of modern life that don't reach Mitch McConnell. He doesn't know what a data set is. He doesn't know what a large language model does. He doesn't know that his own staff is using AI to draft his floor statements. And if there were a bill, he'd never read it. He'd vote because someone he trusts told him which button to push, but he won't understand what he voted for. And my congressional representatives? They may have a pulse, but they're not following this issue either. I checked.
Jack's senator is not hypothetical. Mitch McConnell, the longest-serving Senate Republican leader in American history, 84 years old. He has suffered multiple public freezing episodes, moments where he simply stops, mid-sentence, mid-thought. His office calls them lightheadedness, but the footage is unmistakable. A man who is not fully present. And Mitch McConnell still votes, still shapes legislation. The legal system doesn't require a legislator to be capable of reading the legislation they pass. There's no cognitive test for serving in the United States Senate. There's no requirement that you understand the bills you sponsor. You just have to be there. Physically, technically, or through a staffer with a proxy, and the machinery keeps running.
The old machine. I only learned to be mean.
Yep, and here is the cold part. It doesn't even matter whether Mitch McConnell reads the bill or not, whether he is cognitively present or not, because the legislation itself, the text, the drafting, the analysis, is increasingly written by the same technology we're discussing here. Staffers use AI to draft. Lobbyists use AI to amend. The Congressional Research Service uses AI to summarize. And the member votes. The loop closes. The machine writes the law that governs the machine. And the human being in the chair is just the signature.
The states that are passing AI laws, Colorado, California, New York, New Jersey, they have legislators who are engaged. They still read bills. They hold hearings. But they're the exception. At the federal level, engagement is sporadic. And the gaps are being filled by AI-savvy aides who are whipping up legal briefs in days, not months. When the law is written by AI, reviewed by AI, and rubber-stamped by political representatives, how can we even say that humans are in charge anymore?
I told Jack, you can be angry about all of it. You should be. But anger doesn't fill an inbox. Email does. One email won't change a vote. But 50 emails on one bill? Their legislative director notices. 500? They schedule a meeting with the member. 5,000? They change the vote. Not because they're persuaded. Because they're politicians.
Who are you to be cursing my name? You cannot sue the math. You cannot depose the pattern. You cannot cross-examine a probability distribution. Who do you put on the stand? They will tell you the system is neutral. They will tell you it only reflects the data. But the data is us, our songs, our inventions, our words, our lives, fed into a machine that cannot be questioned, cannot be held in contempt, cannot be sentenced. The machine has no mother. The machine has no judge.
The machine has no judge, but you do. That is the thing. Jack sent the email. Diane helped him write it. And this morning, the legislator, who had never read an AI bill, had 47 new messages in his inbox. Jack's, and maybe, if you do this, yours. Here's how it works. Go to BeaumontandSheridan.com/ACT. That's ACT. Enter your zip code. The page will give you your senator and your representative and pre-written text about AI regulation, training data transparency, opt-out rights, AI-generated content labeling, data center accountability. The things we talked about today. The things Jack and Diane needed. Two options. One link opens your email client, pre-filled. One click, send. The other gives you copy-paste text if you use webmail. This is not a petition. Petitions get counted by interns and summarized in a weekly report nobody reads. This goes directly to their inbox. Direct. And inbox math is real. I've practiced law for 22 years. I can tell you with absolute certainty, legislators don't respond to eloquence. They don't respond to moral force. They respond to volume. Numbers, the raw and unignorable fact of constituents who took 60 seconds to say, I am watching, I am paying attention, and I vote.
Don't go flirting with the troops of pain.
Yeah, don't flirt with the troops of pain. Send the damn email. That's our show, The Echo, Episode 5. A little ditty about Jack and Diane, AI, and the law. The legislator contact tool is live at BeaumontandSheridan.com/ACT. Use it. Share it. Make your legislator's inbox a little less comfortable. Jack Calder and Diane Collins are hypothetical. But there are thousands of Jacks and thousands of Dianes. Real people. Real cases. Real losses. The difference between hypothetical and actual is whether we act. Next time on The Echo, Episode 6, The White Album, The Grift, Darnell Berry, how the fraud was discovered and scrubbed from every platform, and why the blank canvas matters more than the painting ever did. I'm John Shiloh Beaumont II. Zebulon Sheridan is the Echo, the chaos agent. Heavy Comforter is the real thing at HeavyComforter.com.
Let it be known I was really alive.